Okay, here we go. New wrap up for week two. You guys are doing really, really well. Again, I think what I'm going to do in terms of my comments or commentary here is to review what I'm reading in your discussions. And I'm not going to say much about the assignments, and then with the proofs, I'll make some comments and hopefully tie everything up in a nice little bow for all of you. So, you know, the interesting thing about what I've tried to do with this online section, again, where I'm shifting a lot of puzzle pieces around, so don't get too hung up if, like I said, in the PowerPoints or other videos, the weeks seem wrong or something seems inaccurate. It's mostly me trying to reshuffle to get the same content in the 8 weeks. And I think one of the fruitful conversations that we've had in general is, and that's kind of what I wanted this past week, week two, to focus on, was needs, right? And that's why there's like the broad stroke of Maslow's hierarchy. And I think there's a lot of ways to process the language of needs. In the slide deck prepared by Dr. Jim Smith, right, there's these sort of spiritual or soul needs that are to be taken care of. And I think those are important. They're important because they move us towards healthy practices, right? And that's really the way I try to, you know, put language around this. Or, you know, if we're doing some world building here in terms of vocabulary, it is to think of that as, what are healthy habits and practices that I could have? So when I look at the week two discussion here, and again, you guys are doing really well. You know, there are basic needs still, the Maslow kinds of things. And I mentioned this in my previous comment, right? I kind of do broad strokes here with time, money, and energy. And this one's sort of focused on time. But I think you could ask yourself the exact same kinds of questions in terms of, where might your balance be off with respect to your sort of energy and emotional health? You know, what are the kinds of, again, habits and practices you might be using to realign and to adjust that? And how do you prioritize that, right? I mean, I think you can do the same question with your energy and with money and resources, right? So those basic, what we think are scarce resources, that's harder, right? That impacts your checkbook, your financial wellness, maybe your career wellness, right? All of these things sort of go together. I think my one critical comment, if you want to put it in those terms, is that do remember the discussion boards. I read through them. I might make a couple of comments, but really I'm just overseeing them. It is really on you to be engaged, to drive the accountability, and to keep that going. So if you were trying to figure out why you didn't get full points, it's probably because you made a post but didn't engage one or two other students in the conversation. That having been said, kind of looking over at the perusal readings, right, there's some general themes there as well in terms of, and I want to kind of go back and address a lot of the things in the eudaimonic and hedonic happiness, or eudaimonic or hedonic, however you want to say it. Right, there's a lot of overlap, and I think there's a challenge that we run into realistically. Hedonic happiness is the easiest. It is pleasure. It's just simple pleasure, right? It's this little dopamine drop that you get. It's the pleasure that you get from being with your significant other. It's the pleasure you get from chocolate. It's the pleasure you get from, I mean, truly, like even like that first sip of wine sort of thing, or champagne, little bubbles, tickle, whatever it is, like that's it. And the thing is, there's nothing wrong with that, right? There's nothing sort of categorically wrong with those quote unquote base or simple pleasures. It's just that what we know is you can never keep that kind of pleasure going at a rate that will keep you happy for longer, right? It just doesn't work that way. They're all small dopamine drops, and they erode very quickly. And you realize that in comparison, it's not enough to somebody else, and you had to do more to keep bumping that up. And so it's not a matter of saying, you know, eliminate those, right? But it's to realize those are always going to be short-lived, and they're always going to be not enough, and can't really sort of be a basis of our happiness in general or our well-being in general. Now, the eudaimonic sort of happiness or pleasures, or however you want to phrase that, is built around sort of your well-being. And there can be overlap, right? There's something really pleasurable in both directions as far as the hedonic and eudaimonic. If you've had a long day of work and you kind of reward yourself with a little sip of wine or champagne, and you just sit back and you enjoy that moment of what you accomplished that day, right? You sit back and go, man, I got a lot of good work done today. The project got finalized at work, or I got the new job or the new, promotion at work. You just sit back and really enjoy the fruits of that effort, that labor. And the hard part is, right, in the eudaimonic happiness, not every day is like that, because there's multiple steps in that journey, right? I don't think it's a video that's in this section anymore, but we used to show a video, maybe it is still in here later, a TED Talk, an author, she makes a good point, right? You work really hard on an article and it gets published and you're like, yay, but it goes away real quick. and then you write an article and it doesn't get accepted and you're kind of bummed out. It's hard to kind of get back to that set point, right? But the interesting in that piece in that set point is, even when you get that article published like that, yay, the task is complete, even that has like this weird short frame. And so we look at the eudaimonic behaviors and pleasures as being a lot of the steps along the way. When I write, I enjoy the research still, the reading. So actually sometimes the writing is the part that's a bummer. But I do enjoy the reading, and I enjoy sharing the comments and going back and forth with people and structuring the argument. I mean, those things are really fun, and those always give me an immense amount of pleasure, which is really weird because they don't resonate with the hedonic ones, right? And I think that's part of what you're looking at is like, wow, how does that play out? Well, they can be overlapped, but not all the time. And I guess sort of lastly on this, because again, lots of good comments on the happiness set point. I don't necessarily have the additional research, but I think this is pretty good, and I enjoy this. And I will tell you this. Maybe another way for you to think about the percentages and to kind of stress yourself out a little bit over, and hopefully get to some good answers, is even if we knocked your individual happiness, determined by Gen X, as 40%, and pushed up what is tied to circumstances as 20%, I still think that's fine, right? I mean, and what I'm getting at is, I mean, don't get hung up too much on the math of this. I think it's pretty generally okay. But at the same time, we can play with the math and make it a little funny. And one of the reasons I like to sort of make it a little funny is, if you're familiar with the Pareto principle or the 80-20 principle, that's part of what you're looking at. If you're really aware of the 40 or 50% of the genetics that makes you happy, right? What it means, like, what are the needs you have? Because everyone's even different there. Some have real strong time needs. Others have real, truly, like, security, financial needs, or soul needs. Like, once you figure out what that is for you, skipping over that last 40% is like, well, then what are the habits, again, that you're engaged in to, bolster that, to maintain that? And it's really weird, because you realize, like, man, 80% of the happiness comes from how I've been shaped already, and the way that I continue to work with the way that's shaped. And I get to leverage that. And it may only take like 20% of the time. Seriously, I have a morning ritual, if anything, you want to call it that, that's an hour. And I have an evening routine that's probably like half an hour. It's not real time intensive. But then that is the hard lesson. You look at the other 10 to 20% of the circumstances in the world that can either make you really happy or drive you nuts. That does take a lot of time, right? I mean, if you think about, 10% of what drives me nuts is work, and the other 10% that drives me nuts is my relationships. Well, that also takes more than 20% of your time, right? You're 8 hours at work, maybe another 4 hours at home with your loved one. I mean, you get a decent amount of sleep. I mean, most of your waking time is dealing with those circumstances. That's why that little 20% can really feel like it's taking 80% of the work. So, you know, let's establish some balance. And then I think, you know, to cap that off, that's really why we have the gratitude practice. Start with that. You know, the way that I personally do the reflection journals are in the evening. So maybe do that at the evening in terms of your sight. We're going to do that again, except with sound, in week three. But it's the same thing. You do a gratitude journal, you're going to do sound. It's going to be very similar. So keep with the program. Again, I think you're doing a great job, and thank you.